This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It's 7:43. I'm Howard Feldman. Joining us for the Israel Report this morning is Gedalia Blum, his co-founder of the Heartland Initiative. Gedalia, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Before we get into some of the to chat about in terms of updates, I saw on your social media and your feeds that you had been into Gaza. I just wanted to, maybe you could share some of that experience with our listeners, give them a sense of what that was like.
Yeah, so going into Gaza by invitation from the Ministry of Defense, to be honest with you, was very late. The reason why we were invited was to debunk the lies that Israel was had a blockade on humanitarian aid. And unfortunately, and you know, we're very honest with ourselves as our shortcomings. And one of our shortcomings is we're always behind the eight ball on these things. And so the Ministry of Defense, and they're great people, don't get me wrong, but they understood that there is a big problem, that while IDF soldiers are putting their lives on the line to get aid to the civilians within the war zone, they were being accused of starving them. So they brought in a tremendous amount of media, social media, mainstream media to report on the ground. Now, let me just be clear. When you say that I was in Gaza, I was technically in Gaza, but to be honest with you, the Kerem Shalom crossing is on the border of Israel, Gaza, and Egypt. It's where those three points converge in the south. And so we were just over the fence into Gaza, and I didn't feel any war zone, anything like that. But what I did see was in the hot baking sun was thousands and thousands of tons of aid that was dropped in there by the UAE, by Turkey, by, you know, a number of different countries. They put their label on it and they put it in the sun, and the UN wasn't delivering it. So that was our job is to report from the ground what exactly was going on. So the idea was just to debunk the lies that we were withholding aid.
And I guess as well to pressurize the United Nations, because you can't claim that there's starvation, but you've got hundreds or thousands of tons of aid that you aren't distributing. I would imagine that must have been quite awkward for them.
Well, yeah, and actually I was speaking to the IDF spokesperson who actually I was interviewing, and he had said, listen, before we started bringing people, the UN, there was zero culpability. There was no attention on the lack of, and to be honest, the reason was is because the UN, as everybody knows, was in bed with Hamas, and Hamas was in bed with the UN, and they knew that 90%, whatever the percentage, a very high percentage of the aid that was going in was essentially being transferred directly to Hamas. And so that's where Donald Trump came in, and he put in the Gaza Health, what do you even call it, the Gaza Health Agency under Johnny Moore, who's an amazing guy. But they had a better system, but they were also understaffed. They didn't have the infrastructure to deliver. So they relied on the UN to fill the vacuum, but the UN was having a temper tantrum. They flipped the table and they said, if we're not in charge, we're not doing anything. So yes, so bringing people there to put eyes on this situation created a level of shame, which for me was a big surprise that they have even a little bit.
Yeah, considering the culpability in so much that has happened. Let's move to some of the news stories. And late last night, there was this comment or a message from Hamas that they will release all of the hostages they're prepared to do that kind of a deal. What was this, and what does this actually mean, if anything?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. Any leading expert, prime minister, Shabak, Mossad, the guy on the street in the 7-Eleven, the Indian guy in New Jersey, we all, it's a crapshoot. No one knows what it means. But what we do know is what we need to do, and what we need to do is keep the door open. We say, listen, Hamas, if you want to release the hostages, then do it. That's it. We're done talking. We're done sitting at the table. We're going into Gaza City. We're calling for mass evacuations of 800,000 to 1 million people to leave Gaza immediately. And this is the way we're operating. We've already crossed over the Rubicon, where there's no way back for Israel to negotiate with Hamas and keep them in power. It's just not going to happen. So these words are empty words. They're showing desperation. But I will say this, is that we're entering a time that Hamas is under the most pressure. They're the most desperate. They're in their last stronghold in Gaza City. And I want to make a prediction, and I hope it's wrong, but I think it's going to happen. They are right now blocking civilians from leaving Gaza City. Some are sneaking out. There have been reports of families escaping through alleyways, but major thoroughfares outside of Gaza City, they're being blocked by Hamas. Hamas is only defense is their offense in bringing civilians around them and hugging them as human shields. My prediction is that they will orchestrate a mass casualty incident. Well, they will bring people into a small area while the cameras are rolling from many different angles, and set off explosives and watch their own people run through the streets screaming while the mass media picks it up and then puts the ultimate pressure on Israel to stop the war immediately. Because this is literally the only thing that they have. And when you're desperate, you do desperate things. And as we know, Hamas is not starting in a normal, but they're already starting in a place where they're willing to kill babies
Well, not
and
willing. I mean, it's more than that. It actually works in their favor. The more civilians that die, the better it is for Hamas, the worse it is for Israel. It's as simple as that. Therefore, that's what I keep asking people: who gains by Palestinian civilian death? Hamas gains, not Israel.
And that brings to the point back to the humanitarian aid. One of the questions I had for the IDF spokesperson is how did you know how to do this? How did you know how to bring aid into a war zone? Is there a playbook? He says, no, this is unprecedented. Usually we take the civilians out of the war zone and create refugees for them, and they're safe out of the war zone, out of harm's way. They have food, they have health, everything. So the idea that not only is Hamas keeping them in as human shields, but the international community as well is holding the keys to this open air prison, especially Egypt, who signed on to this refugee agreement in 1951 that they're obviously not withholding, upholding. They actually built four additional layers onto their fence since October 7th. And so so the idea that civilians are inside Gaza is a strategic move on the part of Hamas and the international community in order to continue to be a thorn in Israel's side and a weapon against us.
Ketalia, why is it so difficult for people, for rational, logical people, to see what is really going on? How is it that some of the world's smartest people in other areas can't see what is happening here when it is so clear? When you look at every other conflict zone, civilians are allowed or encouraged to move. Look at what happened with Syria. Look at any area. Here it is. That's the situation. We know, as I've just said, Hamas benefits from civilian deaths. We see most of the photos that we've seen about starvation are not real or not relevant. But yet, these things just aren't noticed. You probably don't have the answer, but do you have a theory?
Yeah, I mean, thought, and I mean, and Howard, Howard, I've known you for some time now, and I know that you base your opinions on the reality that surrounds you and facts as a reporter, as somebody. That's not the way the world works, unfortunately. The world works on basing their reality on their narrative, on their thoughts. So they come with this understanding that first and foremost, we see this with not the majority of Christians, but we see this with this replacement theology, where the Jews were thrown out of the land of Israel, and God forsaken the Jews to be a wandering nation for thousands of years. And now you're seeing a lot with Catholics. They built the Vatican. They built the Vatican as the New Jerusalem, as the center of religious life. The fact that the Jewish people came back to the land, the fact that we're the most successful startup nation in the world. I mean, Israel wasn't the only country that was reestablished in 1948 or established in 1948, 1947, 1946. India, Pakistan, you have so many different countries that were established, but it's Israel that became one of the top superpowers in so many different realms, from education, from technology, from medicine, from economics. I mean, we're doing amazing. We have more billionaires per capita than I think most countries in the world. And I think that it comes down to a theological issue. The Jews, we need to, you know what it's like? It's like going to school in classroom, and your teacher says, "Listen, I'm not a perfect teacher, so I am going to give the highest grade 100, and I'm going to move everybody up on a curve." So let's say, Johnny on the front seat, he got 90, okay? And so he ends up getting 100, everybody goes up 10 points. But what if there was a gap? What if there was a really big gap? What if somebody was actually doing really well in class and everybody else wasn't doing as well? So what do? You get Johnny out of the front seat, you throw him out of school, and all of a sudden the guys who got the 70s, 80s, now we're getting hundreds or 90s. So I think that's one angle. And the other angle is, listen, there's always been Jew hatred. There's always been anti-Semitism, and it just hasn't had an opportunity to manifest itself. And I think that this Gaza war is a way for the narrative to be formed very, to be weaponized against us and to be used by what we would think would be normal, rational people who, generally speaking, would base their opinions on fact. And I think that this is connected to, let's say, Trump, derangement syndrome. There's an irrationality when you talk to very intelligent, very astute people, but somehow this emotional,
There's a glitch. It's a glitch. It's
there's a glitch.
a strange thing. Speaking of which, let's just talk about this genocide, this genocide crew, because yesterday it was a little bit embarrassing for them. Just for anybody who isn't up to date, what happened here?
So there was big news all over the media saying that a scholarly institution, an academic institution, had run a survey and a study that said that Israel's committing genocide. And then once nobody really heard of this organization before, so all we had to do was just scratch a little below the surface and realize that this is actually an activist group that, for as low as $25, you could actually sign up and become a genocide scholar. And the way that they were able to go ahead and say that, as an organization, that they believe that Israel is committing genocide, is they actually put out a vote to their members. So everybody got a vote, and it was only like a 28% voter turnout, but it doesn't matter because it's still a vote. But listen. So yes, we have an activist group dressing up as a scholarly, international, recognized genocide authority. Clearly they're not. But I don't think that's the most embarrassing part. And actually, I brought this up, and I did post this on my social media, because I think it's important that we recognize that organizations like this, activist organizations like this, they have their mandate. They're gonna lie, they're gonna do whatever they want to do. But what about the Washington Post? What about Associated Press, Reuters, a PBS, Time Magazine, The Guardian, ABC News, ABC Australia, NPR, all of these media outlets took this declaration and used it in their stories as an authority. For instance, Washington Post, Israel's committing genocide in Gaza, leading scholars association says. Like, they're calling them leading scholars. So the embarrassment is not on this activist group, dressed up as a scholarly institution. It's the fact that our mainstream media, who is supposed to do their homework, are using these activist group dressed up as a scholarly to use it against Israel. And you could see that they're all in bed together. These are not proper media channels. They are activist channels. And you know what? I'll tell you what right now. There is a strong pull when you're on mass media, on social media and mass media, to focus on these issues and to be like a divisive, because you get more views, you get more eyes, this is why, I'll give you an example. Piers Morgan, I want to invite all your listeners to go onto Piers Morgan Uncensored YouTube channel and look at all of the videos, the titles, and the view count. The view count for anything Israel or Palestinian related is like 1 million views. Anything that has to do with normal news is like 200,000 views. There's no incentive for telling the truth. If you're basing your whole business model on metrics, this is the problem, and this is why you have a lot of people who are like the Associated Press and Washington Post using these activist groups in order to create news.
And in doing so, they cannibalize themselves, because, of course, they destroy their own credibility. It is already 8 o'clock. I don't know where that time went. Gedalia Blumer, thank you for bringing us the Israel Report. Really, really interesting conversations. If you wanted to give us your thoughts, please do so. 061-895-1019. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. We'll be back after the news.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
Want to get behind the scenes photos? See what happens in studio? Miss the documentary?
History will not give the Jewish people another chance.
Benjamin Netanyahu at war.
Follow High FM on Facebook and Twitter, where we post the links just for you.